When the Jewish people leave Egypt, the Torah very famously tells us in Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Lamed Dalid of Ayisa, Am Es Betzeko, Terem Yechmatz. The people had to take their dough and run out of Egypt even before it had become leaven, even before the dough had had a chance to rise. They carried it, Misharosam Suros Besumlosam. The leftovers they took bound up in their garments, Al Shechmam. They carried it on their shoulders as they left Mitzrayim. And Rashi tells us that in fact, the reason that they had to do so in such a rush was that the Egyptians, Lohinichem Lishos Kedechimutz. The Egyptians said, get out of here. They rushed them out. They told them, you got to leave right away, because they were in such panic and pressure because of all the firstborns who were dying. And therefore they said, you got to get out right now. Leave immediately. As it turned out, that was even before the dough had a chance to rise. And as Sefsei Chachamim comments on Rashi, it is clear, it is meduyak, that in fact there was no prohibition for the Jewish people to leave Egypt with chametz. Rather, that is something that had to have come independent of that. But in terms of the actual story and narrative, the reason they left without chametz, the reason they left before the dough had a chance to rise, is because the Egyptians forced them to leave without delay. The great Musar master, the altar of Kelim, in his Sefer Chachma u'Musar, wonders, given that obviously all of this is coming from Hashem, all of this is being choreographed up to the finest detail by the King of Kings, by Hashem Almighty, why would Hashem do so in such a way that required the people this hardship of having to leave even before their bread had had a chance to rise? If Hashem was choreographing everything anyway, couldn't he have done so in such a way that the Egyptians would have only asked them to leave, or permitted them to leave and pushed them to leave after the dough had already had a chance to rise, when they would have nice fresh bread to take with them on the way? If it didn't happen the way, as the Torah testifies, presumably that was deliberate. And of course, if it's deliberate, that begs the question, why? Why would it be deemed somewhat critical to the story that the Jews leave in such a rush that the bread does not have a chance to rise? In order to answer this question, the Alter suggests that this is connected to the teaching, the well-known teaching in the last chapter of Perkei Avos, of Pas B'melach Tochal, that in order for a person to acquire mastery of Torah, they have to be willing to have a very, very simple life with very minimal material pleasures, just a bread and salt, as the famous expression goes. And the Alter explains that the pshat is not necessarily that every Jew must live a life of tremendous tsar, discomfort, and asceticism, but rather what the Perkei Avos is telling us is acknowledging that there's a certain existential reality that a life that is dedicated to pursuing physicality and material pleasure is going to be incompatible with a life that is dedicated to pursuing Torah and more spiritual and idealistic aims. The Rambam, paraphrasing this and other Ma'amari Chazal in the third chapter of Hilchos Talmud Torah, also elaborates on this point and explains that Torah will not be acquired, simply not possible to be acquired by someone who is only willing to learn with great idun, with great comfort and indulgent physical conditions, rather in order for a person to truly learn and be successful in their Torah acquisition, a person has to be willing to go even without physical and material comfort. This is reminiscent of, it's not quoted by the Altar of Kelim, but it is reminiscent of a very powerful and famous statement made by Rabbeinu Bachaye in his Chovos HaLevavos, Sha'ar Cheshbon HaNefesh, third chapter, Kasher lo yitchabru echad hamayim v'aish, just like fire and water cannot be contained in one mixture, they cannot mix, kein lo yitchaber b'leiv hama'amin ahavas olam hazeh v'ahavas olam haba. So too, in the heart of a human being, there simply is no place for a mixture of love of the physical and love of the spiritual, love of this world and love of the next. There is a certain existential mutual incompatibility between this love, this pursuit of physicality, and a pursuit and a love of spirituality. This being the case, as a fact, and these sources are indicating this as a simple existential metaphysical fact, the Alter of Kelim wonders why. Why should this be? And he suggests a somewhat prosaic and musar, a message that we can learn from this. And he suggests that in general, the source of all sin and infraction in the world is taiva, is desire for all sorts of things that we might have. But, as he points out, and I think this is a penetrating insight of many, perhaps psychologists, but certainly the world of musar, that desire is not a fixed reality. We sometimes feel that we are slaves to our desire. What can I do? I have this desire. I want this. But in fact, it's not the case. It may be the current reality, but it's not a fixed reality. The way taiva, the way desire works, is that the more you feed the desire, the hungrier you get, the more you want it. However, the more you starve yourself of that desire, if you think that that's appropriate, then while it's certainly difficult in the beginning, but over time, the less you actually want that thing, the less you desire that particular pleasure. Moreover, the flip side is also true, that the pleasure, or maybe better put, the satisfaction a person gets from being able to overcome one's taiva is actually far greater than the pleasure you would get from satisfying, you know, 1/1000th of that desire. We know that it's human nature, whatever the desire is, as much as we have of it, we can never fully satisfy it. So if you just, in a certain rational sense, says the Alter, just compare apples to apples, the feeling of satisfaction and real deep pleasure that one gets from becoming a bigger person, knowing that you've overcome that challenge, overcome your taiva, versus, on the other hand, the actual pleasure you get from, you know, feeding, even though it's a fraction of, but feeding that fraction of your desire, in fact, there's really no comparison. It's actually a greater sense of satisfaction and a greater sense of deeper lasting pleasure to be actually be able to overcome one's taivos. And this is presumably the deeper message of the teaching also from Pirkei Avos in the sixth chapter, Ein ben choron ela mi she'osek b'Torah, that to be truly free, to be truly liberated from one's desires, to be the master of one's desires and not the slave to them, one needs Torah, one needs that infusion of meaning in his or her life, because Torah is what gives us a certain perspective and strength to be able to master our pleasures and not allow them, our desires, to master us. Similarly, says the Alter, that is what is going on when Hashem decides to take the Jewish people out of Egypt before their bread can have a chance to rise. As if to say, or communicating them right at the dawn of our creation as a nation, that you shouldn't think that you're being taken out of Egypt, that you're being liberated so you'll have a nice life of comfort and material pleasure. Rather, you're being liberated not for a more pleasurable life, but for a more meaningful life. To be an Eved Hashem is far greater than being an Eved for Paro, even if it turns out that you have to have bread and salt and unleavened bread and have a lifetime of matzah. It would still be more meaningful and ultimately more pleasurable.